Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Crossland, Corsa and Mokka. Three good reasons to visit the Opel Open Road event.
RTE is to contact the Gardaí to try to establish if the convicted paedophile and former RTE employee Kieran Craven used RTE equipment in his abuse of children or committed any offence on RTE time. The decision to seek clarification from the Gardaí was made by the Director General Dee Forbes. In a moment, I'll be speaking to Jim Gamble, founding chief executive of the Child Exploitation and Online Protection Centre in London. But first, I'm joined by Labour TD and lawyer Ivana Bacik. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. You're calling, are you, for RTE to launch an internal review here?
Yes, I am. I support the calls made by the One in Four organisation. I think an internal review should be carried out by RTE, and I suppose the first thing that anyone reading any account of this horrific case would feel is immense sympathy for the victims, the children abused in three jurisdictions, as far as we know, in Ireland, in Britain, and indeed in the Philippines. Just immense sympathy for the terrible abuse they suffered. And also, I think I would like to pay tribute to the Gardaí, because there was incredibly good and persistent policing work which led to the arrest originally of Kieran Craven in November 2017, and then the subsequent court proceedings. So,
what do you think the issues might be here for RTE?
Well, the first thing to say is that we have established case law on what we call vicarious liability. That is the liability for an employer, for example, for the acts of their employees. So the test here is that an employer is liable if there's a close connection between between the conduct, the unlawful conduct of the employee, and the employment. So, for example, employers have been held liable for sexual harassment by employees. They've been held liable in one recent Irish case. A religious order held liable for sexual abuse carried out by a member of the order on children in their care, so in the school. So clearly it's a bit more difficult to establish liability the more distant the connection. The concern, I think, that I and indeed One in Four and others would have is that if acts of sexual abuse were carried out by somebody who was travelling for employer's business, if they were using the employer's equipment in order to carry out the abuse, that then there might well be liability, civil liability for the employer. Now, there's a clear defence here if the employer took reasonable steps to avoid, took all reasonable steps to avoid it, and indeed if the action was so severe, as it appears to be in this case, that it was really far outside any sort of contemplation of the employment, but it's going to be a test in each individual case.
You mentioned the precedent of a sexual harassment case and also the case of the religious order. Is the difference, though, here that the employer may not have had an awareness that this was happening?
Precisely, yes. And that's why I simply said there's a potential here. I think it's something that that certainly employers are mindful of increasingly, as we've seen more and more cases like this involving, for example, conduct on work-related outings or Christmas parties, you know, conduct which is criminal conduct carried out by one employee against another or against a client or against a pupil in schools, and yet where employers have ultimately been held liable. So it is a matter of the judgment of the court in each individual case. And clearly, if the conduct was carried out in somebody's private capacity, using their private equipment, the fact that they're an employee doesn't make the employer liable. So it really is about whether there was a close connection in place. But it's a matter, I think, for every employer just to be aware of, and certainly where these sort of horrific acts of abuse against children are carried out, you know, it does beg a question if there was any sort of connection between the employment of the person carrying out the abuse.
Ivana Bacik, Labour TD, thank you very much for joining us this morning. And Jim Gamble, as I said, is with us, founding chief executive of the Child Exploitation and Online Protection Centre in London. Jim, thank you very much for taking our call this morning. This was a thorough investigation. I know you're aware of this case. Can you explain to us, though, how police forces would have worked together on this to get to this result?
Well, I think in this type of case where he has been actually in the first instance caught by paedophile hunters, that's where the trigger begins. Anyone who goes into the online space to masquerade as someone they're not, to engage with children, to try and lure them offline or to capture images, is going into a very sticky forensic environment. So when you have him captured, as he was, I think, in Leeds, what happens then is the information will be shared between police and indeed they contacted An Garda Síochána, and I believe An Garda Síochána worked with Interpol. Because once you begin then getting into his devices, the phones, the laptops and the thumb drives and other storage mechanisms that he might have had, then you begin to unpack not just the issue of images, but the where he was, when he was, who he emailed, what travel arrangements he made, and that begins to unpack a much deeper story. And I think, you know, the Gardaí have done really, really well here, persistently pushing and pushing to establish what he did, where he was, and what he might have done in those areas. So a great piece of police work. But this man is your absolute quintessential predator, someone who, you know, minimizes, self-justifies, and blames others. And you see that in his behavior when he's caught the first time. You see that in his manipulation of calling the Gardaí back in, you know, to tell them a little bit about one of his victims, when, in my opinion, he thinks it might mitigate the sentencing. So very much your classic predator, and I am sure there'll be more victims out there.
How difficult is it for a police force to try and find the victims in this case when, you know, when we're looking at the Kieran Craven case, the victims are in different countries around the world and you're using a clip from a video to try and identify where that victim might be?
So in that type of case, what the police and the investigators and analysts will do is they will look at the images, and very often what they'll try and do is to ignore, and I don't mean that in any insensitive sense, that the abuse is going on, but look for the clues about the geography where the offending is taking place. So you'll get some metadata, no doubt, within the digital framework that it's captured in. But you'll also, in one of the instances, there was a TV on in the background. Well, of course, where you're able to identify what type of program is on, is it a regionalized channel, and then you're able to narrow down the vicinity of where that may have occurred. And there's lots of other things I could say but don't want to say because I'll educate the predator. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, working with Interpol, they will try and identify images which have been seen before, but the victim has never actually been identified by virtue of location or rescued. So it's a very complex case. And I think, given that they've got the hardware, that investigations will still be ongoing because, you know, these people never stop. And the victims, even in cases where I used to talk about, you know, we rescued this child or rescued that child, when they've undergone the humiliating treatment and the levels of contact abuse, certainly in this case, the physical scars heal, but you don't rescue them from the mental scars that create a legacy of pain that they carry with them into adulthood. And if there's anyone listening who's been contacted by someone on Facebook in the way that we know this man did, you know, in your own time, you know, at the right time and place for you, come forward, because An Garda Síochána really do have the skills and abilities, you know, with other partners to support you. And at that right time, when you feel up to it, sharing your story with them will mean that they're able to prevent people like this from hurting more young people in the future.
You said earlier, Jim, that you believe there are bound to be more victims out there in this case.
Yeah, undoubtedly so. I mean, classically what you find with this type of predator is they will engage and they will groom and they will use the influence that they have. So in some of his engagements, he used the fact that he worked in the media. That's very alluring for young people. They'll aspire to that type of fame. You know, they'll want to be involved in something as interesting as that. And so they use every trick in the book. Now, we will only have access to the tip of the iceberg. Someone like this is prolific. They have the mechanism to go online. One of the cases I was involved in, not this case, but when we arrested the predator, we found him with three laptops simultaneously engaging with 30 different children because he was looking to get the one that demonstrated the vulnerabilities whereby he felt he could easiest lure them from the virtual world to the real world. And can I just say, when it comes to a review, I think reviews are sensible, but you've got to look realistically. This man was operating as a predatory paedophile. No matter who he had worked for, that would have been a problem. But ultimately, it's about how do you brief and train your staff? How do you provide codes of conduct that are relevant if they're operating in a job which comes with a degree of influence and gives them the ability to travel? My understanding is that this individual travelled, you know, to China as part of the work that he was doing at a particular time. I've worked extensively in Cambodia, Southeast Asia, Vietnam. I'm also led to believe that he spent some time in those areas. So I'm sure Angottish Kaunna are continuing to press and continuing to look, because there will be more victims abroad and there may well be more victims at home here in Ireland.
What did you make of the sentence?
It's always difficult to say, and I am going to say what you'd expect, and I genuinely believe it. I think the sentences don't truly reflect the crime. I think someone that steals the life of a young person in the way that these predators do deserves to spend the rest of their life in prison. It is rape. It is rape of a child. The child, 10 or 12 years of age, cannot possibly give consent. You've got video footage of him actually sexually abusing that child. So in my opinion, and I mean no disrespect to the kind of, you know, learned judge in charge, I think we've got to start sentencing these people in a way that reflects the long-term danger they represent. They minimise, oh, I don't know, I'm so glad I was caught. They self-justify, look, my moral compass was lost. Their moral compass will never be found. The safest space for them to be is in prison.
All right, and we know that RTE said it was appalled to learn the details of Ciarán Craven's apparent crimes. He was sentenced last week to 10 years in prison for sexually abusing children. Jim Gamble, thank you very much for joining us. If you've been affected by anything you've heard this morning, help is available by logging on to rte.ie/helplines for more details there on the resources that are available to you.